All right, I'm pleased to welcome to the show, and he's a regular guest on the program. David Murata is the president of Murata Wealth Management, online at muratonmoney.com, his terrific new blog with lots of great information there. We're talking today about leaning libertarian, and I thought this was a great day. Not that you're telling people to be libertarians, but I think the important thing is to think about why you're voting the way you do.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I've been all over the sort of political spectrum. When you're young, you're idealistic, and you think if everyone just got along and with better centralized planning, mm-hmm. we ought to be able to make all this stuff work. Then you start seeing political scandal after political scandal and crazy laws that do more harm than good, and you start to have to reevaluate what exactly is your political philosophy. And I've been writing the column for a long time, and I decided to put out there why I lean libertarian in yesterday's article, and then part two is in next Monday's article, mm-hmm. because I think it's important that you realize that leaning libertarian isn't necessarily everything that you've stereotyped about libertarians. I mean, if you think about Democrats, you think about the Occupy Wall Street people who say, I just think we should abolish money and all share everything in common.
Yes.
Well, that's not what the Democratic Party believes, but that's what you could easily characterize them as mm-hmm. believing because of Occupy Wall Street. And then you think, over on the Republican side, there are stereotypes there that people sort of paint them. And no one is willing to say they want to be a libertarian because you immediately go to, well, if you're a libertarian, you must be an Ayn Rand follower and believe in objectivism, and you couldn't be religious, and you must want to abolish all roads. And so you have these caricatures about what it means to be a libertarian. And so that's why I categorize myself as leaning libertarian. I'm probably about 85% libertarian and think that's the direction the country ought to be moving. But it's not necessarily all the wacko positions, because I believe one of the things that America does best is that we learn to compromise and we learn to try to find common ground in our values.
You know, this is interesting because we had a producer of an Ayn Rand documentary on the program the other day, and I'm not a follower of Ayn Rand or objectivism, but I do find many of the concepts interesting. I think she was right on about what's going to happen to this country if you go down this road. And quite frankly, I think there's a lot to learn from Ayn Rand and from the things she predicted. So we have a guy in the audience who's kind of politically confused. I think he says he's a libertarian, but he voted for Obama. I still don't get that. But anyway, he took issue with me and said, hey, your like of Ayn Rand and your appreciation of her work is completely at odds with your professed Christianity. You just can't have those two positions, and there's no way you can defend that. And I wrote back to him and said, there's no way that you can put me in this pigeonhole. You can't say that I can't have these positions. But, I mean, there are people who look at that and say, you have to be either this or that.
Yeah, and Ayn Rand defined objectivism as whatever Ayn Rand believes.
Uh-huh.
So it's a little difficult. It's a little difficult to disagree with Ayn Rand and be an objectivist. That is an impossibility. But in terms of libertarian principles, I don't think that's true at all. Most of the founding fathers, I think, actually leaned libertarian, mm-hmm. But they certainly believed also in a creator and a creator God. My own libertarianism, interestingly enough, actually comes out of my study of biblical studies. My religious tradition is Christianity. And in the Gospels, two of Jesus's disciples come to him and they say, we'd like to sit on your right and your left. And Jesus said, among the Gentiles, they lord it over each other and they believe in this command structure and they have this hierarchy. And then he says as clearly as possible, it shall not be so among you. If you want to be great in the kingdom of God, you'll be the servant of all. And so he's actually putting down this idea that you should be controlling someone else's lives mm-hmm. and trying to tell everything that they should be doing. And that's the principle within the Christian church when it's being followed correctly. I mean, I think it was Bertrand Russell who said, Christianity sounds like a good religion. We should try it sometimes. but I think that's the ideal within a Christian church that we ought to be servant leaders, and we shouldn't be forcing ourselves. And I was a philosophy major in college, and philosophy after philosophy says that an act of virtue and charity actually has to be freely done, not coerced. And so for me, a lot of the principles of libertarianism flow out of a religious idea that we have God-given freedoms and inalienable rights, which have to be respected by government, and government oversteps its bounds when it's trying to dictate issues of conscience and morality and freedom.
We're talking with David Murata, president of Murata Wealth Management. We're talking about leaning libertarian on today, Election Day, and what does that mean? And I guess I want to ask you, because we always have this distinction of big L and small L libertarian. Do you see that distinction? And is there one or the other that you would say if somebody asked you the question?
I saw a great cartoon, and it had the 57 flavors of libertarians, and it had everything from the Ayn Rand objectivist to the I just want to smoke pot. So you get a lot of different categories in there, and so I don't think I could distinguish it down to capital L and little L. I'd have to subdivide it into 16 other different categories. But when I think leaning libertarian, I think libertarian in the classical sense of liberty and in the classical liberalism, which is more of the ideas of freedom and less command and control and centralized structure.
Okay, so let's go to some of these specific issues, and I want to go a little bit out of order here. You had a great piece in the Daily Newspaper in yesterday's paper about this. It's part one. People can read it online at MurataOnMoney.com. I want to go to controlling other people's lives is wrong, because this is something that I think America has struggled with. We have, let's just take one example. We have what they call a war on drugs right now. So in your libertarian lean, should we abolish all laws that are restricting the use of drugs? Should we make them legal and just somehow regulate them as we do other products?
You know, that's a great question, and it's one of the areas that I think falls into the gray area for a lot of people who lean libertarian. On the one hand, you know, if it were up to me, I would say that there shouldn't probably be anyone who smokes. I lost two family members to smoking. I think it's a dangerous practice. It's not very healthy. On the other hand, to make it illegal to smoke doesn't necessarily seem like the right thing, because if you start there, you won't stop. Y'all start abolishing all fat. Y'all start abolishing, you know, eating unhealthy. You'll start abolishing not hydrating enough and not getting a good night's sleep. And you'll start abolishing not exercising. And all of those things, I think, are good things to do, but I think they can be promoted in other ways. So then as you start to drift into more self-destructive and you know, self-destructive behaviors, I know addiction is an incredibly difficult thing to pull yourself out of. And you need to have someone who's willing to get in your face and rescue you. So I think, you know, I don't think, first of all, I don't think that our laws have done much for the war on drugs. I think it's as clear as can be that the legal system is a poor substitute. And probably if you legalize them all, you would have some good and some harm. There'd be some people who would engage in drugs that are simply not engaging in it because it's illegal and they're afraid of it being illegal. And then you'd probably have some regulation of it and discussion of it that would be a little bit more open and honest. And you might have some people who would actually get help because the illegal part of the aspects brings its own underworld. So, you know, that's one of the areas where I'm flexible. It's not that I care whether or not drugs are legal, but I understand that drawing the lines there are difficult. And during Prohibition, we had a lot of people who did not drink during Prohibition, and a lot of marriages that were probably helped, and a lot of, you know, but Prohibition as a whole probably was not the right aspect to try to stop drinking. The temperance movement back in the 1800s was probably much more successful at curbing alcohol abuse. So, you know, that's an area where I think there's a morality, but I'm not sure that the legal aspect of it is actually going to bring about virtue. It's just going to be a war. And so I'm ambivalent there. It's part of the 15% I probably don't care about all that much. And so I'm not going to be out there protesting for people to be able to take heroin, you know, in their homes or in clinics or things like that. And it's so caught up in the rest of society that I may be fine for them to be smoking pot, but when they get on the public streets, I don't want them to be smoking pot and affected driving on the public streets. So it's the same thing with alcohol. Alcohol is legal, but you know, you've got all of these other dangers that it causes to society, and putting away drunk drivers is also an aspect of trying to control the problem and contain it to where it's not going to do any harm to other people. So the harm to other people in society, family members and driving and you know, public safety and public morality of people who want to avoid that kind of behavior all sort of plays into it. And so that's part of the 15% where I'm not really convinced, but I'm not really convinced otherwise. It's part of, maybe it's on the borderline between the 15 and the 85.
Well, I think it's a really hard one, and it really does go back to morality, because ultimately you'd like people to say, hey, we understand there are problems here with this, and this is probably not a good thing for us or for society, but putting these things into laws and legislating how people live, it's a mixed bag. We're going to get into more of that when we return with David Murata after the break. We're talking today about his column, Leaning Libertarian, and it's online at muratahonmoney.com. It's something that I think everybody should think about when you're thinking about how you vote, not just whom you're voting for, but why you're voting the way you do. And do the people you're casting votes for, do they actually represent what you believe? Can you vote for them in good conscience, or are you just following a political agenda? We'll get into more of this when The Shilling Show returns on our Election Day special.
His bite is worse than his bark.
Did I start?
No!
Rob Shilling on News Radio 1070, WINA.
That's the phone number. The amazing Leon Oliver is standing by to take your calls. It's our Election Day special coming up in hour number two. We'll be opening up the phone lines to you, your election considerations, who you're voting for and why, incidents or interesting occurrences at any of the various precincts in our listening area. All of that coming up in hour number two. We've also got cell phone numbers for a number of the candidates, and we'll have them on as time permits, but it's going to be your hour, and I hope you'll take advantage of it. Right now, during this hour, we're continuing this conversation with David Murata, and we're talking about his column about leaning libertarian and why he's leaning that way as he's gone through and considered a lot of things in life, a lot of experiences, and does it make sense for people to really consider libertarian ideals in their voting? Now, we were talking before the break about legalizing drugs, but I want to get into another area. And you had a really interesting point that government regulation does not create security, and yet so many people believe that it does. I want to start out by talking about licensing, because many people think, well, if a doctor has a license, that means he or she is a quality doctor. Is that true? And can we rely on licensing, not only in the medical field, but my goodness, I heard Neil Bortz talking about this sometimes in places like Atlanta, where you have to have a license to hang wallpaper. Hold on. There we go.
The certification you need to cut hair in Los Angeles is tremendous. And what licensing does is it's actually just a barrier to entry. You can't easily enter the field until you've gone through all of this certification process. And then there's also a number of regulatory processes that are put on several fields. And the best thing to remember is that when you think about regulatory compliance, you should think about having your paperwork in order. It actually doesn't measure whether you're good or not, or whether you're doing the right thing or not, or whether your paperwork actually matches reality or not. So Bernie Madoff had all his paperwork in order, and he had all of his documentation, and when they reviewed that, they were told, look, this guy's got to be a Ponzi scheme. It's not. His returns are unreasonable. They reviewed his paperwork, and he had all of these basic trades that he had listed that he had done, and they thought, well, it looks like his paperwork's all in order. That's okay, and it would take a lot of work for us to actually go see if this paperwork matches reality, so we won't bother doing that. It actually wouldn't have taken much work at all, because all of the trades that he said he made, none of them were made. And if they'd gone and gotten a listing of the trades that were made, it would have been a blank sheet of paper, and they would have caught him. So it's not as though having your paperwork in order matters a whole lot. The mine disaster that was hit, mm-hmm. They talked about how the company had all these regulatory violations. None of the regulatory violations had anything to do with the mine disaster, by the way. But it's easy to have regulatory paperwork out of order. And if you're going to be running any kind of a scam or cutting corners, you will have your paperwork in order more than if you're trying to run your business. And I think that's the biggest thing. So now we have regulatory paperwork for underwater drilling, and we have to certify that we have the underwater drilling safeties in place. And then we have to certify that someone has certified that they're in place.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have to certify that we've actually tested one of these things and it seemed to work. But none of that is actually going to make underwater drilling any safer. It's just going to have all your paperwork in order. And so a lot of these compliance costs, I think, end up being confusing because it's just government paperwork. Whereas if you have a private organization that's trying to certify something like Underwriters Laboratory,
mm-hmm.
and they're actually accountable and will insure you differently because you've got this certification
mm-hmm.
in order, and they're certifying that it's correct such that you can sue them in court and collect a damage, then you've got a private industry that's doing it and actually has some skin in the game because they have not only their reputation, but they have insurance backing behind it as well. So the private industry just does certification a lot better than government does, because when government gets something wrong and the government process of certifying that cantaloupes don't have anything wrong with them, when it goes wrong, nobody looks to the government and says, "Hey, your certification didn't mm-hmm. actually work. It didn't help. Can I sue you because of that? Yeah, are you underwriting this such that if someone dies because they've eaten cantaloupes, that you're somehow protecting us from, or is actually going to protect us from it?" And so government doesn't protect us from things as well as a private agency who's got some backing would.
So if we had, let's look at this model now and say, if we had physicians, for example, would it be okay for anyone to just hang a shingle outside of their door and say, "Hey, I'm a physician, I can do surgery on you, I can do this or that," and then somebody else next door hanging out the same shingle has gone through all the schooling and everything else? Can the free market work in that way? And can we really just peel back all of this regulation and say, well, a few people will probably be sacrificed because, you know, someone hung out the shingle and wasn't able to do the surgery, but it's good in the long run. Is that what would happen?
Well, currently we have one standard. You have to be board certified. You have to have passed the test. You have to be, and there's one standard. So there's either you're a doctor or you're not a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't more than one standard. In most of private industry, there end up being multiple standards. There's the gold level of certification that's offered by, you know, J.D. Powers, and then there's people who don't have any certification who have a much lower trust in them. And so you can have, you know, gold, platinum, silver, bronze, you know, over the counter and fly by night. And you as the consumer actually get to choose which of those you wanted to go to. I had a foot infection recently and I knew I needed antibiotics. I even knew what kind I needed. So I had to go to the doctor to get antibiotics and that cost a $200 doctor visit.
Yeah.
You know, so it's much more expensive in this country because you can't get antibiotics without going to a doctor than it is to do something where it would be much more open. If you can go to Mexico and you can get antibiotics over the counter, and if you can self-diagnose or be your own physician, you can actually do that. Now, maybe that's not a great idea. Maybe that's not the gold standard, but it is a standard which would lower healthcare costs. And so we're back and forth in that area, and the question is whether or not the free market should have the ability to pay less for your healthcare and get a lower standard, or whether all the healthcare should be one certification, or whether there ought to be maybe a higher certification, and I want to only go to the ones that are backed with money back guarantees and insurance, and they're going to make sure it's all right. And have that level of playing field. So you're right. It becomes a lot more you have to know what you're doing and a lot less you have to trust government.
Mm-hmm.
But the more I've seen of the way that government does regulations, the less I trust in government regulations.
Let's talk just very briefly, and then we're going to go to the break with David Murata here. Let's talk very briefly about this concept of buying antibiotics over the counter. So we've heard that in this situation that antibiotics are overprescribed in the country, that people are using them, the effectiveness is going down. Is there a common interest in restricting such a product because of the lack of effectiveness if it's overused? And we know a lot of people would just go and buy antibiotics, therefore rendering them less effective.
Yeah, this is the reason why libertarianism quickly goes into all of these questions about societal oughts.
Mm.
In other words, should it be okay for society as a whole to benefit somehow from the fact that I have to pay $200 to get antibiotics that should have cost 20. So that's the question back and forth. That's a huge cost, and you're going to have to tell me that that is somehow a societal, because I got them anyway. It just cost me a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have to tell me that there's a lot of people abusing their freedom, and that the abuse of that freedom is causing harm to other people. And then I'll want to say it's causing a very direct harm before I'm going to be willing to limit their ability to get that. As it turns out, now people with money can go get antibiotics anytime they want. So it's now a difference between the rich and the poor. The rich can go abuse it and get antibiotics anytime they want, mm-hmm. by going to talk to their doctor at $200 for a visit. But the poor can't get antibiotics and can't go do that. So you know, these are all sort of the edges of libertarianism, and they're the edges of trying to figure out, you know, what we need to do. We were talking during the break, and I said I'm not so sure that marijuana and harder drugs should be legal, but I'm pretty sure that drinking raw milk should be legal.
Yes.
And so that's one I don't see the benefit, because raw milk is probably not what 80% want to drink, but 20%, there's actually good reasons to drink raw milk and unpasteurized milk. And I didn't realize that. I heard Ron Paul say we ought to be able to drink raw milk, and I thought, why is he advocating drinking raw milk? And I went and looked into it, and there's whole websites about the benefits of raw milk over pasteurized milk and all the things, the good that comes of it. So there's things like that where there's a clear good to doing something, and yet we have laws against it. And so when I say I lean libertarian, about 85% of our laws fall into the banning raw milk. And maybe about 15% of our laws are actually trying to wrestle with, is the overuse of antibiotics causing medical problems for the country as a whole?
977-1070 is the phone number. And when the Shilling Show returns, we're going to be taking Steve's call. And we have a line open for you at 977-1070. The final segment with David Morata, our Election Day special, coming right up.
The world is changing. Are you listening? The Shilling Show.
It's like I'm on some wonderful drug.
Woo-hoo! On News Radio 1070 WINA.
It's the Election Day special on The Shilling Show. David Morata is our guest. We're talking about his column on Leaning Libertarian. You can visit him online at MorataOnMoney.com to read this column and lots of other terrific information. We also have a line open for you at 977-1070 if you have questions, comments, or challenges. And let's say hello to Steve. Steve, thanks so much for calling The Shilling Show, and you're on with David Morata.
Hey, good afternoon. I think an important distinction to make in a lot of people's minds is the difference between libertarianism and anarchy. And I think a lot of people mix those two up as far as especially when you start looking at regulation versus, you know, just unfettered free market. There are lots of times where there does need to be regulation. The government does need to step in. We've seen that. But yeah, there are also things. Now, there are really other good reasons other than the greater societal good why you should not be able to go out and get antibiotics, like drug interactions that you may not be aware of and, you know, potentially harm yourself. But, I mean, there are lots of good things that why you do need to have someone who is an expert in said field look at what you're doing for your own good, not just the greater good.
Let's get a comment on that, because it's an interesting distinction as he talks about libertarianism and anarchy.
Yeah, there's no question that most people's view of libertarians is complete anarchy. Anything goes. They're going to put a waste factory next to your house, and we're not going to have any kind of planning or blueprints or maps or regulations. And libertarians, that doesn't work, because for anarchists it certainly works, but for mm-hmm. libertarians it doesn't, because one of the tenets is that you can't be hurting other people. And so you can't put something that's going to be belching smoke and that's going to be drifting over my property, because that's an infringement upon my rights. And so as a society, we get together and we decide there are areas to have certain kinds of zoning, and there's areas to have other kinds of zoning. Now, zoning laws, you know, in many places have been taken way too far to extremes, such that something that doesn't impinge on anyone's rights still can't be put on a piece of property because of some crazy zoning laws. We have an office down at the Boar's Head that we rent, and we're looking to buy an office. And I've looked at for a number of pieces of property that are zoned commercial, but not zoned for an office. And I can't figure out why, because it's not as though an office would be any more commercial than any of the things it's zoned for.
Mm-hmm.
But they just have these crazy zoning laws, and you have to go through a huge zoning process that's a bunch of people who are sitting trying to regulate all this. And I don't understand why an office building where people are going to come visit and talk about financial planning issues would be that intrusive on any of your neighbors if you're zoned commercial in the first place. So
yeah.
So zoning laws can go way too far in one direction, but libertarians think there should be zoning laws. It's just in our zoning laws, we ought to lean toward giving people as much freedom as possible, so long as it's not impinging upon other people's rights.
Let's go to the phones, and the lines are full, almost. We've got one line open at 977-1070. Let's say hello to John. John, thanks so much for calling The Shilling Show. You're on with David Murata.
Hi, Rob. Hi David. I am very much enjoying this, and I wanted to piggyback on something that David said and also urge him to calibrate one aspect of his verbiage. To piggyback, everything that he's saying, it boils down to the one thing that we didn't get when we got when we elected supposedly the smartest man in the world to lead us in 2008, and all these supposed geniuses in Congress, is it comes down to what Mr. Jefferson said, that the essence of good government is preventing people from injuring one another. That's what it boils down to, and that's exactly what he's been saying. And 99% of the laws that have been created since passing the Constitution, since ratifying the Constitution, have nothing to do with preventing people from injuring one another. It has everything to do with the government telling us what we can and cannot do with our lives, with our property, with our money, with our eyes, ears, mouths, etc. And the aspect that I would urge him to calibrate his verbiage is when he just said to, the government should give people as much freedom as possible, I would urge him to rephrase that to honor and respect the freedom that we are entitled to by our own nature, by our right, and to not infringe on that freedom. Government doesn't give us freedom.
Yeah.
We are entitled to it by our nature.
And that's terrific. Let's let him respond to that real quickly.
John, you are 100% correct, and I am glad you clarified that, because I couldn't agree with that more. To add to that, I think I said in my column that imprisonment should be the punishment for evil, not for falling short of ideals.
Let's go quickly to Howard before we run out of time. Howard, thanks so much for calling. You're on with David Murata.
I really enjoyed this conversation. I'm shocked that you don't want to legalize marijuana, but that's, okay. I have a different point to make, which is that I think there's a qualitative difference between regulating a paper hanger and regulating physicians. And so when you said on one hand that cheaper antibiotics would make it better for poor people, it's unlikely if you unregulated physicians that the poor people would have access to what you call the platinum doctors. They would more likely get the wood or maybe the mulch doctors. And so I really think as little regulation as possible is desirable, but you can't talk about paper hangers and physicians in the same context, in my mind.
Yeah, and I think you're exactly correct. And we have been trying to move that way in the medical circles by saying that there are some things that a doctor needs to do, and there are other things that a registered nurse or a physician's assistant can do. And so we're trying to actually make healthcare more affordable by pushing it down to RNs and lesser caliber, if you will, but still sufficient to the task at hand. I think there's a lot of doctoring that's very at a low level that could be easily handled by someone lower than a doctor, and I know that our regulations are trying to push more in that area. So I do think that's a good way to do it. And if we had multiple regulations or we had multiple levels, there may be more things that non-doctors could do in terms of health. So, but I agree with you. Doctors are need to have a high caliber because we're putting their lives in their hands, and that some regulation there is probably well warranted.
And Howard, thanks for the call. It's always good to hear from you. I appreciate it very much. And by the way, I haven't seen a doctor in years that I can recall. I see a nurse practitioner. Hopefully I'm saving money. I don't know if she's charging the same as the doctors in that office, but in any event, I'm still healthy. David Murata, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much. A great conversation.
Yeah, really important on Election Day. Murata on money.com. When we get back, it's the Election Day special. Open phones hour 977-1070. Get in line right now. Call Leon. He's standing by. We want to hear from you. The Shilling Show continues after the news.